In a relatively short career, Warraba Weatherall has graduated from university with a degree in contemporary Indigenous art. He's mounted his first solo exhibition and been a finalist in the Telstra Art Award. And that's not surprising, because his work is underpinned by a research-led practice and a strong conceptual approach. His work is also awesome. He's one of the 14 Indigenous artists who will exhibit in a group show at a new gallery in Canberra called Cambry. And it's called that with the permission of the four traditional owner groups, the four Indigenous communities in Canberra. And the show is called While You Were Sleeping. It's the first exhibition ever in a $260 million redevelopment curated by Ambush Gallery. I spoke to Warraba Weatherall from Brisbane.
My name is Warraba Weatherall and I'm from the Kamilaroi Nation in southwest Queensland.
Warraba, your practice is really interesting. You graduated, what, 2016?
2016, and then I just completed my honours last year too.
Wow, so you went on to do honours.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing a doctorate too, but we'll wait for that one. We'll deal with baby number two and then see how we go.
Now, the last time you and I spoke, it was around the around Institutional Lies, your exhibition at Metro Arts in Brisbane, and I was very pleased to write the catalogue essay for that particular exhibition. But this exhibition down in Canberra for Ambush Gallery at the new space there at ANU called Cambry, which work are you putting in this exhibition?
So it's a segment of the institutionalised installation. So it's the central power apparatus that's going into the show.
And it's a frightening visualization, this power apparatus, as you've described it. It's the central sculptural form in the original exhibition, Institutional Lies. Tell me about the idea from which the power apparatus comes.
So, modelled off the architectural scheme, the Panopticon, which is a style of prison where the central watchtower oversees a bunch of prisoners who are in a sort of circular formation, but the central watchtower, from an elevated point of view, is able to see the prisoners, but the prisoners aren't able to see the watch person to assess whether they're being watched or not. It's modelled off that in that type of circular fashion, but the actual apparatus itself isn't a central watchtower. It's actually been juxtaposed with a craniometer that's been used within craniometry and physiognomy, that type of pseudo-scientific endeavour from a while back, or some people would question whether it's still happening and still got residues in contemporary science as well.
Well, I've seen this work and I've certainly seen images. I've never seen it in real life, but it's beautifully crafted. How did you make it? I mean, is it made of aluminium? I mean, what's the primary material that you've used in the creation of the power apparatus?
It's still an aluminium, and so I think a big sort of industrial sort of form, I think, fits it as well. And I would imagine would be pretty similar to a craniometer that has actually been enlarged to a dominating scale, yeah.
And the craniometer is pierced with these radials. They're like spears, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's all different forms of craniometers, but one of the ones that I used as my reference was it had a roughly 30 measuring pins that would go around the cranium and measure the sort of diameters and circumferences. So I've kind of subverted that and put a bit of cultural knowledge and experience in there by repositioning spears facing the internal space of the craniometer. And instead of having a cranium, a skull in there, I've fabricated a cast iron globe. So the conceptual sort of development of that is that the dominant ideology is that of colonialism, of pseudo-scientific endeavours that have been racialised against Indigenous peoples and peoples of colour around the world.
Well, we've seen those photographs of craniometers being used, you know, during experiments and scientific expeditions throughout this country, and there's chilling photographs of the plaster casts being taken of children's faces and then the cranial measurements being taken, and we only have to look at the, say, the Tyndale records, for instance, held by the South Australian Museum, where every single part of the human body was measured. They're yep. frightening. They are frightening. I mean, what you've created is also frightening, but it's beautiful. But the craniometer and the panopticon, both frightening visions of, I guess, of inhumanity, man's inhumanity to the rest of humankind.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even on a further note with that, the Tyndale's collection over in the South Australian Museum, that, you know, there's so much Camilla Roy stuff that's in that institution as well. And it'll be interesting to see how those conversations are coming about now, where so much of their collections are being repatriated. So, you know, all nations around the country that South Australian Museum houses those cultural materials. There was a book called Camilla Roy and White, and there was an anthropologist that went over and to various regions around Camilla Roy, Culanabri, and, you know, places like that, and took measurements of people, and it was all limbs, it was nose breadth, and you know, all that type of really dark, shady stuff. So I've sort of built in that from documentation of my own people. And it's just, even this day and age now with the Identity Services Bill, so talking about biometric surveillance and not so much historical surveillance within a panopticon structure, that these type of measurements and the standardized sort of human behaviors or measurements are still used within biometrics today, and so much of those people who are programming those programs are white men. And I think that there's so much of a subtlety where programmers are programming in their own lived experience and their own sort of cultural biases, which creates further room for, in this technological age where people of colour and Indigenous peoples, queer communities, women, all these different minority cultures and communities have the room to be further criminalised because they don't meet the standards.
Now, you were shortlisted for the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Award, the Telstra.
Yeah.
I think with a sketch of at least part of the installation. Was it the cages, and I think with numbers from the recommendations of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody?
Yeah, so that was a study of one of the sculptural forms that are made for institutionalised, and they were Victorian-style bird cages that were more similar to gibbets that were used to imprison human bodies. So I needed the size of those to be large enough to fit a human body inside. And then inside the cage was large trees that had been sort of uprooted and displaced from their environment, but severed and fractured through each sort of level. And then I've deconstructed the trees and then reconstructed them with these very metal industrious spines. So they are used within Camilla Roy burial practices. But in this case, I haven't put in customary patterns and designs and instead inscribed numerals that correspond with recommendations from the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. So the one that I painted for the Telstra Awards was recommendation number 92, which I believe was that imprisonment should be a sanction of last resort. And even now, you know, 31, 32 years since that Royal Commission, you know, that still isn't valued. Out of so many of the recommendations that were put forward, they kind of just fall on deaf ears or they don't get adopted unanimously, yeah.
Now, the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, that whole provision about the sanction of last resort, that prison should only be used when there was no other option. We see almost daily examples of where that provision has been completely thrown out. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that vastly, most of the recommendations have never been implemented. And I think that fills many of us with rage, but I think it also provokes the work that you make.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'd you know, for us black fellas, it's easy to see this. Like we talk about this, we live this, and it's nothing new. But for a lot of sort of mainstream Australia who don't maybe have an understanding or a reference point to that, like it just goes to show how much of this conversation is pushed out of mainstream media a lot of the time. I just wanted to mention when you were talking about like in an international context, I come across this writer called Elia Zurich. He's a Palestinian writer who, similar to like Edward Said, talks a lot about surveillance and Orientalist tropes and that type of thing. But just in sort of summarising what he says in regards to surveillance and its role within Indigenous peoples outside of a prison context, in that he says something along the lines of surveillance positions Indigenous peoples in a place where they must always be disappearing. And I think that that's so key to institutionalised work and some of the research that I've been doing, in that the processes of watching, you know, surveillance, the gaze that identifies people as a threat and then documents that information about them to a point where we're getting ruled by records, and it's when colonization becomes a bureaucratic process. It's not mission managers, you know, physically abusing people and stuff like that. It's very layered and very complex within sort of bureaucratic and administrative forms that colonisation is thriving within 2019.
The artist Warraba Weatherall and his work is part of an exhibition called While You Were Sleeping at the Ambush Gallery in the new Canberra Cultural Precinct at the ANU, the Australian National University in Canberra. It's on now. And if you want to see precisely what the power apparatus that Warraba was talking about looks like, just head to our website, abc.net.au/rn, and find a way in the program menu.